All right, so today is Thursday, March 5th. We're going to start on page 67 and talk first about respiratory anatomy. All right, so I know you've done a lot of this material in lab. We're going to look at it from the standpoint of being, how do you deliver clean, warm, humidified air to the lungs? So a lot of the structures that the air passes through in the respiratory system has the goal of making sure that the air is clean, warm, and humidified. Obviously, clean is important, right? We understand why we want clean air to be delivered to the lungs. But why humidified air? Why warm air? What's it better for? What's happening in the lungs?
Diffusion.
Diffusion, right. So we know that diffusion rates actually occur when you've got warmer temperatures. So if you're breathing outside on a really cold morning and you feel that cold air sting inside your respiratory pathways, it's not able to diffuse as greatly at a colder temperature. It's able actually to diffuse better at a warmer temperature. So a lot of the structures here are all about cleaning, warming, and humidifying the air that reaches our lung tissue. I'm going to start you off with the obvious external structure to our respiratory system, and that's our nose. We know inside the nose, there are a lot of structures here that help to clean the air. Some help warm to some extent. So on your sheet, you've got the external portion of your nose made up of nasal bones. There's actually a little piece of your vomer that makes a piece of the tip of your nose down below. In fact, interesting story about that vomer bone. It's the one that determines how long and or pointy your nose is going to be. So you can feel the little vomer bone sitting right down here at the base of your nose. Now, inside your nose, we've got linings with moist mucous membrane. So we've got moist mucous membrane that is ciliated here inside the nasal cavity. And there's also some coarse hairs here as well. What do you think the coarse hairs and the moist mucous membrane are doing to the air coming in?
Filtering.
Yeah, filtering out whatever's coming in, whether it's dust, debris, bacteria, viruses, whatever, we're going to filter that as that air is breathed in through our nose. Just a thought to consider, does your mouth have the same filtering capability?
No.
So, you know, shut your mouth, breathe through your nose, right? So they talked all in all about this coronavirus being a respiratory disease, and if you're breathing through your mouth, you're missing one line of defense here and being able to filter and screen what's coming into your respiratory cavity. So, you know, don't sit with your mouth agape and breathe. Close your mouth, breathe through your nose. You're going to increase that filtering capability of what's moving down into your lungs. Hopefully, it'll be a little clearer than what moves through your mouth. All right. Internally, you'll notice there are nasal concha here, or turbinates. These turbinates are actually going to help spin the air through the nasal cavity. And in spinning the air, just like wind turbines, they're going to sling contaminated mucus up against the walls of those turbinates. Well, there are cilia in here, part of what we call a mucociliary complex, and their job is to constantly sweep that contaminated mucus to the back of your nasal cavity. In fact, it will drip off the soft palate and drain down here towards your mouth. You will either clear your throat and swallow it, or you will spit it out. So you're probably completely unaware of this mucociliary complex moving that dirty mucus back, but it keeps it from dripping out your nose. Now, on a cold morning, though, those mucus and cilia are not doing their job, so the mucus will drip out your nose on those days. So we're hoping with these turbinates here to help increase the speed of the air and trap more mucus and bacteria before it gets headed down to the throat. All right, so notice internally we've got the maxilla bone. Where do you find that?
Upper jaw.
Upper jaw, right. So it's part of your upper jaw. It also forms the floor of your nasal cavity. You can see over here we've got the nasal bone. A little piece of the vomer bone sticks up about there. You've also got the cribriform plate, which is not easy to see from this particular view, but that's part of which bone? This is reaching way back in Bio-210.
Ethmoid.
Yeah, so it's like literally a plate of bone that is sticking in the middle of your nasal cavity, not visible from this view though. And it's around those cribriform plates that we have the olfactory bulbs picking up smell, yeah.
All right.
So going back to that maxilla for just a moment, it creates a boundary between our oral and nasal cavities. And in fact, it's called the hard palate when we look at it from the viewpoint of the mouth. If you go back far enough, though, we run out of maxillary bone, and we now encounter just some tissues. Those tissues form what palate?
Soft
palate, good. So the soft palate ends in the uvula, or uvula, that little flap that hangs at the back of your throat. And one important reason for that is it helps for mucus to drip off and miss your tongue. Nobody wants that stuff dripping on their tongue, right? So the mucus that drains off the back may drip from your uvula into your mouth, back of your oral cavity. Alternately, when you are swallowing or when you're coughing, that uvula and soft palate actually seal up against this nasal cavity and close off the passageway there. What does that prevent from happening when you're swallowing or coughing?
Food
from getting in your sinuses. So that's one very good reason to have both palates and this suction device here that helps to close off food from traveling the wrong direction. All right, so looking at physiology of your nasal cavity, mainly the inside portion, we have coarse hairs here that help to filter the air coming into your nasal cavity. We also have mucus, and we have cilia. So that's three things right there that help to filter the air entering into our nasal cavity. Coarse hairs, mucus, and cilia. You ever have a nosebleed? Do you tend to have them in the warm, humid days of the summer or the cold days of the winter?
Humid.
When the heat first turns on in the wintertime.
Yeah, dry. So some people may have them year-round, but if you're only having nosebleeds in the wintertime, it's probably because of the dry air. And if you've got really dry air, that makes the vessels in your nasal cavity and that mucous membrane tend to be a little more dry than normal. There are a lot of capillaries there. They help to make the air warm traveling through the nasal cavity. And if you are doing anything that puts pressure on them, they can pop and bleed. So that is just a symptom of having some really dry air. So the vessels in our nasal cavity are helping to warm the air that passes through and also to provide moisture because there's fluids in the blood traveling through the vessels in our nasal cavity. So warming and humidification, two more functions of your nasal cavity. We also know smell is an important job here. That is aided by those olfactory bulbs situated near the cribriform plate. Let's talk about the paranasal sinuses. They're located in four of our bones.
The fems,
right. So frontal, ethmoid, maxillary, and sphenoid. That's a great way to remember it. So if you ever have sinus problems, sinus headaches, sinus infections, we know that there are more than one set of sinuses. The frontal sinuses, of course, and the frontal bone are above the eyes. Common problem for people is maxillary sinuses here on either side of the nose. But you know, sometimes if you have head pain and neither of those sinuses are clogged with mucus, it may in fact be these back in the back, these ethmoid sinuses behind the nasal bone, or even the sphenoid sinus, which is even further back. So if you have a sinus infection, it may not always feel like clogged up maxillary or hurtful frontal bone sinuses. It may be those hidden ethmoid and sphenoid sinuses. They are supposed to be hollow, air-filled cavities in your bones, but they also are lined with mucous membrane, and they also produce and secrete mucus into your nasal cavity. The mucus that drips out of those sinuses comes through a very narrow passageway, and bacteria can go both ways. That means if you've got bacteria in your sinuses, they can back up into any of these four pairs of sinus cavities. And if that happens, you've got inflammation and infection and maybe even have a case of sinusitis or sinus infection. So that's the unfortunate thing about these closed space cavities, that they can become infection areas. These chambers are also resonance chambers for speech, and I know that if you've ever had a really awful head cold, you have heard your own voice echo inside your head. And if you've been really stopped up, you feel like you're talking and your head is just reverberating with your own voice. And that's partly because their job is to help make an echo chamber for the sound of your own voice in your head. All right, so those four paranasal sinuses, PHIMS, are a great way to remember those for frontal, ethmoid, maxilla, and sphenoid bones. How about questions so far on the nose? So pretty cool here. You can see the black space on this x-ray is actually where air is housed in those sinuses. You can see one that's completely not a black space. That means there's not air there. It means there's something in there, probably.
Swollen shut,
yep. That's gotta hurt. All right, bottom of the page, we're gonna talk about the throat, which is also called the pharynx. There are three regions of the throat. From superior to inferior, they are
nasopharynx, oro, laryngo.
So N-O-L, right? Nasopharynx is exactly where it's supposed to be. Nose pharynx is at the back of the nasal cavity. In fact, it does sit above this soft palate back here. You'll notice on your sheet, this is a passageway for air only. Well, if you've ever had milk come out your nose, you know that sometimes other things can make their way into that area, but this is supposed to be an air passageway only. You'll also notice there are two openings here for the Eustachian tube. You can see them better in this picture. The Eustachian tube is an opening that goes into your ear. It's also called an auditory tube or pharyngotympanic tube. Whatever you call that tube opening, the job of that tube is to equalize pressure between your throat and your what?
Ear.
And your ear. So if you ride in an airplane, ride in a car in the mountains, hey, go over a tall bridge. You may feel your ears close up, and if you swallow or pull on your earlobes, you help to pull open those Eustachian tubes or auditory tubes, and that equalizes the pressure on either side of your eardrum or tympanic membrane. Bad news about that Eustachian tube or auditory tube, though, again, if you have contamination like bacteria, other pathogens that are sitting in your nasal cavity, they can go through very small openings such as this one. So they can travel from your nose-throat area through the tube towards your ear. And if the infection now sets up in your ear, we call it what?
Otitis
media. That's right, otitis media. So that is an unfortunate thing about the way that tube happens to work. So little kids have tubes that sit fairly horizontal. That's why ear infections are more common in little kids. As your face begins to grow through your teenage years and you get into your adult years, those tubes angle down more. It just makes it easier for fluids to drain and stay in your throat and nose area and not have bacteria back up into that ear area. So hopefully we see by the time people reach adulthood is less ear infections due to the way that your face and those tubes will angle as you get a little older. Okay, so let's flip on over to 68. So there's not just the Eustachian tube in the nasopharynx region. There's also a set of tonsils back here. This set of tonsils is called the adenoids. Alternately, it's called the pharyngeal tonsil. And it's one large mass of tonsil tissue sitting at the back of your nasopharynx region. You cannot look in the mirror and say, ah, and be able to see this one yourself. But if somebody takes a scope, a lighted scope, and shines it up through your nose, they can see straight through the nasal cavity and back here to these adenoids sitting at the back part of that nasopharynx region. So what do you think happens if you have repeated infections or inflammation in those adenoids?
They get bigger.
They get bigger, yeah. And if they get big, they can actually seal off this flow pathway here for air going through.
Snore, yeah.
So in some cases where the adenoids end up causing blocked airflow, they may take those adenoids out. In fact, the surgery that's commonly performed is called a tonsillectomy, an adenoidectomy, or a TNA. And that takes out not just these adenoids, but also these tonsils that sit down here in the oropharynx region. Those are palatine tonsils, to be specific. We know nowadays that the tonsils do play an important role. What are they cleaning out of the air coming through your nose and mouth areas? Bacteria, microbes, viruses, yeah, whatever you're breathing in, that's a one point at stopping that stuff from getting further into your system. Okay, so we've already talked about the uvula, or little flap of soft palate that hangs down here. We know that is a point for mucus to drip from the back of your soft palate from that nasopharynx region. Let's now move to your oropharynx, which we know is back here at the back of your mouth region. All right, so if we've got the tongue here, we come to the back of the tongue. There are, in fact, two sets of tonsils here in the oropharynx region. The tonsils sitting at the base of your tongue, what are they called?
Linguals.
Linguals, good. And how about the ones embedded on either side of your throat? Palatine, good. Let me distinguish here. The adenoids are called pharyngeal tonsils, technically throat tonsils. Palatine tonsils sit here below the palate, just not to get confused with the two names of those sets of tonsils. Now, if you do say ah and you look at the back of your throat, you'll see two little oval-shaped patches of tissue back there. That's the palatine tonsils sitting on either side. They too can become scar tissue if you have repeated tonsillitis. They can also become kissing tonsils, which means they swell to the point that they block the airflow or even food passing through the mouth area. These linguals sit at the base of the tongue. It's really hard to see those if you say ah and stick your tongue way out, but you may see two little sets of bumps back there at the very base of your tongue. So all of these tonsils are about cleansing the pathogens like microbes, bacteria, viruses, out of what you're eating and breathing before it gets further down into your respiratory and or digestive pathways. Let's go back to the big picture. The point that we hit when we go beyond your mouth is now the laryngopharynx region. And this is actually a point at which both food and air are traveling, but we now have to decide how to route the food and the air. Should food and air travel the same pathways from this point forward?
No.
Definitely no, especially not food, right? So we want to route the food into a posterior tube. It's called what?
Esophagus,
good. And the air should travel an anterior pathway. We now head into what?
Larynx,
good. So you'll notice there's a flap sitting here. That epiglottis should cap off the opening to your larynx and force food into the posterior muscular tube. That's that esophagus back there. Okay, so we've got three regions here, naso, oro, and laryngopharynx. That is the pathway from superior to inferior. Which of those three pathways is only for air?
Naso,
good. Which pathway has no tonsils? Or which part of it?
Laryngo,
yeah. So what tonsils are in nasopharynx?
Adenoids.
And of course we've got palatine and what in the oropharynx?
Linguals,
good. So by the time you get down to laryngopharynx, that's where we're routing the food and the air. There's no more tonsils down at that point. Okay, so tissues here in the nasopharynx region are lined with moist mucus ciliated membranes, and those cilia are sending the mucus in what direction? Mucus membranes that are ciliated up here in the nasal cavity, in what direction do they send that mucus?
Down.
Yes. Down to the oropharynx, and then it'll drip on down to the point where you have to decide, am I going to swallow this or is it going to drain into my vocal cords? So it's going to keep on draining after your cilia up here push it back. So we'll keep in mind the direction those cilia are pushing mucus, because it's going to come to a different flow pattern further down into your respiratory passageways. All right, so here's a view inside. You can actually see the adenoid sitting back here at the back. You can see a eustachian tube or auditory tube opening, and the floor of the nasal cavity means that we're looking down onto where that maxillary bone would be sitting toward the soft palate at the back. So this is what we think of as the larynx. Its simple name is the voice box, but it's more complicated than just being a voice box. There's a lot of going on in this organ. So we call it an organ because it's got multiple tissue types that make it up. All right, so halfway down your page, you'll notice that this is a passageway connecting your pharynx region to your lower trachea. The walls are made here with hyaline cartilage. So let's start with this shield-shaped piece of cartilage here on the front. What is the name of this piece?
Thyroid
cartilage, good. And the piece below it?
Cricoid.
Yeah, cricoid or cricoid, however you like to say it, cartilage. And if you keep on going further inferior, what do you now run into?
Trachea.
And it also has rings of hyaline cartilage. I do want to make mention, though, that these rings, as we go down below, don't actually go all the way around. They're only on the front and the sides of that trachea. The point of having all of this cartilage here is to help make sure this airway stands open. So we call it a patent airway when we need it to stand open. That means it's like a straw or a tube. It's open and air can flow through. And you don't have to work to move air through muscular tubes that may collapse in on themselves. All right, so you do have some cilia and mucous membrane in this larynx as well. The vocal cords, however, do not have any cilia, interestingly. So if you ever have mucus land on your vocal cords, you have a feeling to clear your throat, right? So the only way to get mucus that lands on those vocal cords off of them is to either cough or to clear your throat, and that's just the natural way to get rid of it. All right, so when we look inside, we've actually got a layer of folds here. These are moist mucous membranes that form your vocal folds or vocal cords. They vibrate to produce speech, but it's not just them that produces the speech. It's the air moving past your tongue as well that helps to make sounds that we recognize as words. So vocal cords or vocal folds, they are actually mucous membranes. Let's look at this picture. There is an opening coming into your larynx, and this opening is called the what?
Glottis.
Glottis, good. The flap of cartilage, however, that sits above it is called the?
Epiglottis,
good. It is an E word, which should remind us of elastic cartilage, E for epiglottis and E for elastic. This epiglottis is meant to act as a flexible cover over the top of that glottis opening. So when you're talking, when you're breathing, that epiglottis should sit up so that air can flow into or out of your respiratory system. What is the only time that that epiglottis should cover up the opening to the glottis? Swallowing, right. So when you're swallowing, you will actually feel your entire larynx mechanism move up. That allows that epiglottis to cap over your glottis. When you're done swallowing, the entire mechanism relaxes back down. So you can feel that whole mechanism move every time you swallow. All right, so here you can see the glottis opening. That is the space between the vocal cords. You can see on either side, there you've got vocal cords or folds. Those are the mucous membranes, okay? And then sitting down here is that huge flap of epiglottis. It's gonna flap over the top of that glottis when you swallow. Whoops. All right, so let's see if this will play for us. Let's see if we have any luck with YouTube today in here. Ah, I hate that. Okay, I will send you that video. It's really cool because they run a laryngoscope down into Steven Tyler's that whole larynx region. He makes singing noises, and you can see his vocal cords doing this vibration number as he's singing. So it's really cool to be able to see those vocal cords in action. I don't know what's going on with the YouTube here, but I have to remember that the next time we want to look at something. Okay, so you can see those vocal cords do close, they do vibrate. When we do the Valsalva maneuver, we talked about that one in the last chapter, you actually use your conscious control to close those vocal cords. So that helps to trap air in the lungs and increase abdominal pressure. All right. So that takes us down to the physiology of our larynx. Voice production, of course, is one major job here. If we have laryngitis and we have inflammation of those vocal cords, and that may take days or even weeks to get over as that larynx becomes less inflamed. There's that Valsalva's maneuver. You may want to highlight that term. It is a commonly missed term. So when we do the Valsalva's maneuver, what are we closing?
Close off the glottis.
Close off the glottis, slam shut those vocal cords. If you shut the vocal cords, can air come and go from your lungs?
Yeah.
Nope, so you are in a sealed off state. When you do this, you're actually using it to increase pressure in your thoracic cavity, in turn increases abdominal pressure. So if you're having a bowel movement, if you're bending over to pick up a heavy box, you very often do this Valsalva's maneuver. You don't even realize you're doing it. A few years ago, you may have heard of Joan Rivers. She had gone through a laryngoscope, and they were checking out her vocal cords. I believe she had some polyps on there. Maybe they were looking at that. And unfortunately, during this, what was meant to be a very simple procedure, she died. Yeah. Her vocal cords closed in this locked position, and either they didn't or couldn't respond fast enough with either medication to help her or a tracheotomy, which would have bypassed this whole problem. So unfortunately, she suffocated by having her vocal cords close and lock shut during this procedure. So a trach, which would create an opening further down, would still allow the person to breathe in the situation where those vocal cords shut. They're like elevator doors. They lock shut, and that's it. So there's the epiglottis. We talked about that one already. Just a flap of elastic cartilage sitting there above that glottis. There's the opening right there, that glottis. All right, so that should take us down there to the bottom of page 68. How about questions so far?
So when somebody drinks something and they start coughing and it's the turn and it went down the wrong tube or something, is that what that is?
It is most, sometimes you can feel it. It's actually sitting somewhere on top of that epiglottis. That immediately triggers that cough reflex. If it's worse, you're right, may go through the glottis opening and hit the bronchial passageways, and again, that triggers that cough reflex. Yep.
So is it kind of the same thing like throwing up? And sometimes you throwing up bad enough, it might come out your nose or whatever.
In that case, let's go back to this picture. Yeah, if you're vomiting and it comes up the esophagus here, it comes into the oropharynx, and it can go either pathway, either through naso or through the oral cavity.
Okay.
Yeah. Nose,
yeah. Yeah, if you laugh, you're right. Or anything that you've got in here may come out of the nasal cavity. Yep. All right. So in terms of where we're located, you'll see the larynx and that thyroid cartilage is right here below our neck area. You can probably feel the thyroid cartilage. Both males and females have it. We call it an Adam's apple, of course, in males. But right below that thyroid cartilage, we start feeling a ribbing effect, and that's where those C rings of cartilage start to emerge. Now we're moving down into the trachea. So you can see the trachea starts here in the neck. It travels down into the chest cavity, and then it quickly branches off into these bronchus passageways. So let me take you over to the top of page 69. The trachea is about a 4-inch long passageway. It's a patent airway, just like the larynx. Patent meaning what? Open. Yeah, so how do we prop open that trachea?
Those C-rings,
right. And I just want to repeat, they are not O-rings of cartilage. They're C-rings, meaning They are cartilage on the front and the sides of the trachea. They do not travel to the back side. Why don't they travel to the back side of your trachea?
Your esophagus has to contract.
Yeah, your esophagus has to move food through, and if you've got a bunch of rings of cartilage back there, you don't have a lot of space to be able to move food down that tube. So let me fast forward you to the picture on those C rings. Yeah, it kind of looks like a horseshoe, doesn't it? So this is a ring of cartilage in the trachea. It looks like a horseshoe. It is made up of hyaline cartilage. And you can see on the backside, here's that muscular esophagus tube. And if you swallow a fairly large piece of food, it has to have room to expand, because sitting back up against this portion is going to be your spine, the body of those vertebrae. And on this side, we've got some muscle tissue. So you can have a little room for expansion here on the back side of that trachea. All right. So here you got another look at those C rings. They look O in this picture, but in fact, they're just C rings of cartilage. All right, so inside of your trachea, you have, again, moist mucous membrane. Again, we've picked up those cilia. And the cilia in your trachea, here you can see them, are not moving contaminated mucus down further. How would you prefer for them to move contaminated mucus?
Up and out.
Up and out. So the contaminated mucus in your trachea, if it's made it this far, is going to be pushed upward towards your larynx. You will cough it out into your mouth. At that point, you either have the decision to spit out this contaminated mucus, or you may just choose to swallow it. All of this happens, and you may not even be consciously aware you're doing it. So you do a little cough, you move up the mucus, and then you swallow the mucus that comes into your mouth area. So in this particular region of our lower respiratory cavity, you'll notice that we have what type of epithelial tissues?
Pseudostratified,
right. So it is ciliated, okay, and that cilia, of course, is crucial in moving out that contaminated mucus. What does smoking do to these cilia? Yep, shrivels them, kills them, burns them off. And what does that do to your defensive mechanism of getting rid of contaminations? Yeah, you don't have that anymore. So unfortunately, you've now gotten rid of one of your lines of defense and getting bacteria, viruses, and whatnot out of your lungs. They now have the opportunity to travel further into your respiratory cavity. Never mind that you now have a greater chance for infection, but you've also got the contaminating chemicals from the cigarettes that can cause damage to the lung tissue itself. They say if you stop smoking, that these cilia can grow back and they can restore their function of helping to brush out and remove the contaminations that come to the trachea. That doesn't mean, however, that you can get rid of the chemicals in the cigarettes or the vape juice or whatever that's gotten into the lungs that can cause chemical changes, DNA changes in those cells down there. All right. So if we travel along with the trachea, we come to a point that it splits off. And this V-shaped piece of cartilage, the last piece of cartilage there, is called the carina, and it signals that we are now going to branch into two smaller passageways. What are the two tubes that branch off the trachea?
Bronchi.
Bronchi, good. So we will, of course, hit that as our next point. I do want to make a note here. There are muscles in between each of these C rings of cartilage, and you did see them on the back side here as well. And these muscles around your trachea can actually change the diameter. So you'll notice under the physiology, if you're under stress, the sympathetic nervous system will make your trachea diameter dilate. What does that do to the size of your trachea? Opens it up, increases it, right. More air can travel through your trachea if you're under stress. That makes sense, right? If you're running from a wild animal that thinks you're the next meal, you want more oxygen. Exactly. You'll notice under parasympathetic control, the diameter here constricts. That means the diameter of your trachea gets smaller because we don't need as much oxygen when we're relaxing. All right, so let me take you down to the bronchi for just a moment. By the way, there's where a trach tube would be inserted below the larynx, right here between these bones. That's a place to bypass any blockages from the larynx up. So if the vocal cords do close, the trachea at least allows oxygen to come and go through the trachea. Although it is a simple procedure where you can make a slit between the C-rings of cartilage, there is great danger associated with doing so. What vessels run up your neck?
Carotids.
So if there's any damage done to the carotids, now we've got delivery of oxygen problems to the brain, or if there's a lot of bleeding, we can introduce that into that opening, and now the blood gets down into the lungs. So even though it is a simple procedure, it is certainly wrought with dangerous things going on either side of it. All right, so here we are at the carina. We're going to split off into these tubes to the left and the right. Each tube is called a bronchus with a U-S ending. Together, they are called
bronchi.
You'll notice in the image here, they are not the same length, nor are they the same diameter. Why are they different?
The heart's in the way.
The heart's in the way, exactly. So the heart pushes these vessels, or these passageways, kind of a little asymmetrical, you might say. Which one of these two is a longer, more narrow passageway?
Left.
You'll notice the left one is. You'll notice the right one is short and wide. So I make this point because when people aspirate food, it goes down the right one. Yep. They say that a hot dog cut in rings or a peppermint candy, you know, those circular peppermints? Cough drops, yeah. If those get aspirated, they form a perfect plug over the right primary bronchus. So if it gets stuck there, about the only way to get it out is what?
Heimlich,
right. Use the diaphragm and a fist to use the air in the lungs to force that, whatever is sealed up that hole, force it out and so you can cough it and get rid of it. All right, so dangerous there to think about things that are about the size of a hot dog or a candy or, like you say, a cough drop that can seal up that particular area.
Actually, yeah,
sure.
So when you get, like, bronchitis, is that like an infection down there?
It's whatever it is, it's inflammation. It probably is stemming from an infection. Yes, it can cause fluids to come into the area. It can cause swelling and difficulty breathing. Cough is just a natural mechanism to help with all that stuff that accumulates in there. It takes 2 to 3 weeks for new tissue to grow. So if you have, you know, say an infection or whatever set up residence here and those cells get infected, it'll take maybe as long as 2 to 3 weeks to grow new cells and get rid of that infection. So that's why things like those coughs hang around forever. Okay, let's see. So on your sheet there, you'll notice the first set of branches off of your primary bronchus are actually called secondary bronchi. So they come down the trachea, we come into primary bronchi first. The second tier of branches are called secondary bronchi. They will branch again into tertiary bronchi. What do you think happens to the diameter as we continue to branch?
Smaller
and smaller. And I should also mention, now that we're away from the esophagus, these are O-rings of hyaline cartilage. They wrap all the way around those tubes. They keep them patent, which means they stand open. If they were to collapse in on themselves, you would have to work to breathe, and that's more work than we can do. So it's critical that we have these rings of cartilage prop these airways open. What do you think these primary, secondary, and tertiary bronchioles or bronchi are lined with?
Cilia.
Good. And in what direction are they pushing that contaminated mucus? Up and out, right. Moves it to your trachea moves it up to your larynx. You either cough it out, spit it out, or you swallow that contaminated mucus. All right, so once again, we're looking at pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelial tissue. It is critical for that cilia to help move that contamination up so you can keep it from getting further into your lungs. All right, so what we've done is we've traveled into what's called a bronchial tree, and that's, or a respiratory tree, you can call it that as well, at the very bottom of page 69. You'll notice we terminate with our very smallest passageways called bronchioles. Now, if you read the book or if you read on this material, there's actually two types of bronchioles. We're not going to distinguish between the two types. One type has rings of cartilage. The others lose the cartilage. We're going to talk about the ones that eventually just have no cartilage because they are so tiny that we don't have room for the cartilage in the bronchial passageways. So if you have no cartilage for them to stand open, we're now getting to the point where you can start doing gas exchange. So we are getting so small in these respiratory passageways that we also do not have room for cilia. Okay, so looking at the passageways here, what I'm talking about are terminal and respiratory bronchioles. We start doing gas exchange down here by the time we reach those respiratory bronchioles. Now, since we've run out of cilia, you have no way to move out that contamination. So now we have to involve the immune system in fighting anything that makes it this far into your passageways. So that actually will take us over to the top of page 70 with the alveoli. And I think that's probably a pretty good place to stop. Why don't we pick up with the alveoli on Tuesday after break, and then we'll work into some disorders. And if you want to read ahead, we're going to start talking about how to breathe. That's going to be on pages 72 and 73.